Welcome to episode number 103 of Radio Free Asgard, our second anniversary show. Believe it or not, it's been 2 years. Jeez, seems like a lot longer than that, actually. Anyway, so 2 years it is, and we missed a week, of course, so otherwise it would be episode number 104, but of course it is episode 103. So here we are after 2 years, still with you, and committed to another year or two or three or four or however many this ends up going on. Hopefully we'll be here for a good long time to come. There is an email address for the show if you want to communicate with us. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also join us over on our Facebook. And just look for Radio Free Asgard over there, and you'll be sure to find us because we're the only ones over there. All right. So, not a lot going on. Really, this has just been one of those weeks. I've been spending a lot of time playing Minecraft. And, of course, I'm sure a lot of you geeks out there know how fucking addictive that game can be. So I've been playing it a lot lately, I have to say. Yeah, once you learn how to just survive overnight, it becomes a lot more fun, you know what I'm saying? And of course, being me, I've got the sort of Norse mythology sort of theme going on here, and I do intend at some point to attempt to build some semblance of Asgard, because you can do things like floating islands and stuff in the sky. Basically, you have to carve out the insides of mountains and, you know, just leave part of it floating up in the sky. And hopefully have like a rainbow bridge going too. And that's the aspect of the game that I enjoy the most. I really don't care that much about the monsters and the animals and stuff like that. I just like building stuff. But I am playing it in survival mode. So I have to go in and dig through my catacombs at night rather than run around outside. It's kind of like in real life. The only time I get outside is when I go to work or if I go geocaching or something. Anyway, so besides playing Minecraft, I've been doing a few other things as well, of course, you know, work and, of course, reading the issues that we're going to be covering here on the show. Last couple of episodes, of course, we had the last couple of issues of Thor: God of Thunder. And this week we're going to shift gears again and we're going to go back to continue where we left off before we were so rudely interrupted before our 100th episode. And we are going to go back to the 1960s, the Lee Kirby era, continuing on with the magnificent saga of the Mangog. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
So this week we will continue the adventures of the mighty Mangog with Thor number 155. Incidentally, this issue has been reprinted a couple of times. You can find a reprint of this in the Essential Thor Volume 3, and of course in the Marvel Masterworks Thor Volume 7. Cover date on this issue is August of 1968. Cover price is 12 cents. Artwork is by Jack Kirby and Vinnie Coletta and shows Thor's arm drawn back as though he's ready to strike with his hammer. And he's getting ready to strike none other than the magnificent Mangog himself in all of his misshapen glory. And he's all yellow and brown, and he's got his, you know, clenchy kind of mechanical finger things. And he's wearing these really fancy purple, like, boxer shorts, which he's not wearing inside the issue. Inside the issue, he's just wearing ordinary ones. And we see the ruins of a city. It looks like an Earth city. Kind of ruined behind him, though I'm pretty sure that this doesn't... No part of this takes place on Earth, as I'm pretty sure. So we open up to the splash page, and we have the title of the story, of course, Now Ends the Universe. And Stanley and Jack Kirby were the creators of this story, embellished by Vinnie Coletta and lettering, of course, by Artie Simek. And we see Thor flying over, I guess some of it takes place on Earth. He's flying over what looks like New York City, and he's musing out loud to himself, "Verily, there be dark clouds a-gathering, clouds of deepest evil, which do chill my very soul, for they herald the coming of Ragnarok. In letters of fire it hath been writ, the day of Ragnarok shall witness the end of the world." Dun, dun, dun. And he's continuing to fly over the city, and I guess it's cold out, or there's a thunderstorm going on. Of course, I don't know if this thunderstorm is coming from Thor himself, or whether it's just, you know, lousy weather in New York. So these people are kind of bundled up in their coats, and Thor's musing about them. "To them who dwell below, upon the planet Earth, is merely the gathering of a storm. 'Tis better thus. 'Tis better that they do not suspect their fearsome fate. But until yon dreaded final moment comes, the God of Thunder shall pit his strength against it. Yet how do I battle that which I cannot see? How do I challenge that which doth bid fair to crush us all? Each silent passing moment doth bring the cosmos closer to the brink of doom eternal. And yet stand I, awaiting some mystic sign, some awesome portent which doth not come. But I shall not stand alone. Wherever immortals dwell, the summons shall be met. Aye, let all of Asgard gird its loins. Overcome we must, or perish we shall." And we shift scenes to a hospital room in New York City. And we have, of course, the beauteous Sif, who is recovering in the hospital from her wampin' a few issues ago. And she looks like she's being read to by a nurse. So that's something you don't see every day in a hospital anymore. The nurse is commenting here, You sat up so suddenly. Is something wrong? 'Tis a danger which words cannot explain. I don't understand. You were recovering so nicely. If you're feeling ill again..." "Nay, 'tis not an illness of the flesh. Would to Odin that it were." And there's a voice coming from beyond, says, "My lady Sif, I have come for thee." And Sif is like, "I am ready, my lord." And we see Thor, though, he's silhouetted and backlit in a really weird way, which means we can see all of him except for his face. And his face is in, like, this really dark shadow. Very un-Kirby-like. So I kind of wonder what happened here. I mean, did Coletta spill his ink on the page here or something? I honestly don't know. But Thor appears to be glowing anyway. And Thor saying, "Thou hast seen the omens. Thou hast heard the silent call. Thus we may tarry here no longer. The time is come." And Sif gets up out of her hospital bed and says, "Whatever awaits us, Sif shall face it with thee. Like Asgardians have we lived, so shall we die." Thor lifts up his hammer, and there's these sort of rays coming out of it and striking Sif. And kind of like a heat lamp is kind of what it looks like. Could be that Thor is giving Sif a tan. And the nurse is like, "Your hammer, those strange rays." "Be thou silent, woman." So Thor is totally being rude to the nurse. Well, let's face it. I mean, he's got a lot of bad experience with one particular nurse who kind of deserved to be told to shut up now and then. "Let the Uru enchantment of my mallet speed the healing of my lady. Nurse, be gone. That which now transpires is not for mortal eyes." The Thor is being a dick in this issue, isn't he? And the nurse goes running out of the room. "She hath departed. And now, so too must we. Let my hammer spin. Let the vortex form. Let distance melt away." And it's kind of whirling. And for once, we don't get like the Ajax White Tornado. We get sort of this sort of green, I don't know. It's a vortex, I guess. But it's like, it's not like a tornado. It's more like a tunnel sort of thing. Anyway, so this is green glow. And Thor and Sif reappear on the Rainbow Bridge. Miraculously, Sif has changed from her hospital gown into her armor and her sword and all that. So apparently they were there in the hospital. I don't know. She didn't change between the last two panels, so who knows what's going on here. And so Sif is stating the obvious here. "Now stand we on the Rainbow Bridge, my lord, the eternal road to Asgard." "Aye, and let us pray that all do thus assemble." And they go off towards the city. But we do shift scenes here. We are back in the Kingdom of the Norns. Remember that Balder was kind of dragged to Carnilla's castle, and remember she had her old frozen boyfriends there, and these propositions Balder, and Balder's like, no, I can't go with you. And she's like, oh, you'll be sorry. And so this is being played out here in Carnilla's castle. Carnilla offered thee her heart, but thou hast chosen death. I do not fear thee or thy frozen warriors. Asgard hath need of Balder's might, and the realm eternal shall not be denied. Now there is no turning back. I did warn thee. Accept half my throne or face the Legion of the Lost. But they be dead. Nay, they do but sleep a frozen sleep, until the Queen of the Norns sees fit to bid them awake. And she casts a little spell on them, and they come alive, and they all start to converge on Balder, because apparently they realize that she likes him or something. I guess frozen boyfriends get really, really jealous or something, I don't know. And Balder doesn't seem too intimidated by this. He's like, then strike as thou wilt. Balder shall not flinch.
There is still time, Asgardian. Do but say the word, and Carnilla shall drive them back.
I say thee nay, my queen, for time hath now run out. And Balder is fighting all these warriors, and says, there be a need far greater. There be a danger far more deadly. The Golden Realm doth call her sons, and Balder shall give answer. And we then shift scenes again. A lot of scene shifting here for a 60s comic, isn't it? And we get a page here, and it is in the realm of the colonizers. Remember the coloners of Rigel, the aliens with these big, ginormous heads? They have this kind of beautiful Kirby-esque sci-fi background here. Well, I guess it really wouldn't be Kirby-esque because Kirby drew it. And there's some sort of weird stasis tractor beam sort of thing. And you see this sort of humanoid character in this sort of tractor beam thing. And we get a little bit of narrative here. But even beyond of the reach of fabled Asgard, the awesome danger is perceived. Even as far as the world of the alien colonizers, 1,000 galaxies away. And there's a footnote here that says, the distance is approximate. So we have the old man colonizer with the big, huge-ass head, and he's like,
our ionic probe scopes are detecting deadly pulsatrons from the other end of the universe. Pulsations so powerful that they can only mean the end of all life is near at hand. We must dispatch the robotic recorder. Only he can enter the forbidden black galaxy. Perhaps there the menace lies.
And we then shift to the recorder himself flying through space. And in the background, we see Ego, the living planet. Remember Ego back from Thor? It's like Thor 131 thereabouts. Kind of right around there. It looks like the recorder is flying away from Ego and saying, observation, all is as it has ever been. Conclusion, the answer to the greatest threat of all time must be found elsewhere. And so that, I guess that means the threat of all time is not there. So we then shift scenes again back to Asgard. We see the Warriors Three, Fendril, Hogan, and Volstagg, and they seem to be having a bar brawl, fighting in a tavern, and there's tables being thrown around, and Fendril is swinging from a rope, but the rope seems to be threaded through marshmallows. It's the goofiest looking rope I've ever seen, and it really does look like marshmallows. And he's doing his Errol Flynn bit. How about thee, witless knaves? Didst think to match the savage skill of Fendril the Dashing?
No need for mere weapon hath valorous Volstagg. With mountainous girth alone do I topple yon babbling bumpkins.
And he's pushing down all these people with his belly. And we have Hogan in the foreground, swinging his mace. His
back, ye whimpering, whining sons of Satan. Back before the matchless mace of Hogan, called the Grim.
And Loki comes walking into the bar, I guess looking for the Warriors Three. And just as he walks in, a sword comes sailing by his face. And he's like,
desist! Thy liege commands!
And that gets everybody's attention. And you know, the fight stops. And the Warriors Three are kind of converging on Loki, seeing what's going on. And Loki's explaining to them,
whilst Odin sleeps, 'tis Loki who doth reign.
Yeah, remember Odin is in the Odin sleep. That happened the issue before this.
Thou shriekest like a jackdaw, but ne'er wilt thou replace the slumbering eagle, says Fendril.
Well, thou knowest, evil one, thou art monarch in name alone.
No matter. Since battle thou desire, then battle shalt thou have. Attend thee the words of Loki.
Then speak, and have done with it.
Where canst thou find foe worthy of Volstagg's mettle?
He who is called Mangog is reborn. Mangog, the sole survivor of a long-dead race. Mangog, he whom even Odin fears. Mangog wilt thou fight.
And Loki sends him away.
Do not return till he be slain. Loki hath spoken.
And the warriors three go wandering off. And it's weird. Hogan is wearing this sort of red leather kilt thing that I don't think I've ever seen him wear before or since. Anyway, it doesn't match the rest of his outfit at all. It's just incredibly garish.
If Mangog truly lives, then none are safe.
Not but the power of Odin can aid us, says Fandral.
But he doth sleep the Odin sleep, says Volstagg, from which he ne'er may be awoke, lest life itself may leave him.
It has been said that should the Mangog be reborn, even Odin would stand helpless before his wrath.
Aye, not all the power in Asgard can give him pause. We are truly doomed. But we will die like warriors.
Fandral is always so optimistic.
Didst thou say die?
Stand fast, voluminous one. Where goest thou?
Unhand me, noble Fandral. I do but hasten to summon the god of thunder.
But even he hath not power enow.
Fie, 'tis no time to quibble over trifles. I must bid farewell to my devoted wife.
Devoted wife, indeed. 'Twas to escape her ire that he didst join us, lo, those many moons ago.
To horse, rotund one, lest we surmise thou art afraid.
Afraid? What meaning hath such a word to Volstagg? Hath it not be said that Volstagg's very name spells bravery incarnate?
Aye, it hath been often stated, but only by thee thyself.
And Volstagg mounts up this poor horse. Oh, gosh. And the three of them go riding off. These are wonky-looking horses, I have to say. I guess, you know, horses, especially like realistic horses, were never really one of Jack Kirby's strengths. Which is not to say that Jack Kirby didn't have other strengths, which, of course, we know he did. And Loki is watching the scene, and he's kind of peeking through a door, and he's gloating to himself,
"Ha! 'Tis done. I have truly sent them to their doom."
And his advisor's like,
"And what of us, my lord? Is not all of Asgard doomed, so long as the Mangog doth approach? In thine unyielding hatred of all who art allied with Thor, thou must not forget the danger which doth confront us all."
"Silence! Thou art addressing thy rightful king."
And their voice comes from behind.
"Not so, perfidious one."
A voice. "Behind me! Who dares to speak?"
And it turns out to be Thor and Sif arriving on the scene.
"The god of thunder, how art thou seated upon the throne of Odin?"
"Thor, thou hast come too late. Our father sleeps the Odin sleep, from which none may have leave to wake him. Since thou wert not here, Loki, his other son, hath replaced him on the throne. And once so seated, not even thou may dare defy me. 'Tis the law eternal."
"Thor cares not for the mouthings without meaning, for words without worth."
"Brother, stand ye back. Loki commands."
And the Thor is approaching the throne rather boldly here.
"The throne is mine. The scepter is mine. Death to him who opposes me."
"Evil one, what profiteth a man to keep his throne if he shall lose a universe?"
Yeah, another botched biblical reference there.
"I have heard the news of the Mangog. The time has come to unite, to join forces, and stand together against him who would destroy us."
"'Tis you who must do battle. Loki was born to rule. Get thee forth, Thunder God. Face the Mangog. Slay him or die."
"Thou thinkest to destroy me. Even in this hour of darkest peril, truly thou art most villainous of all. But, stepbrother, know you this. With each passing minute, the monstrous Mangog draws ever closer. And when tolls the bell to proclaim the fall of Thor, do not rejoice, for it shall toll for thee as well."
And we get a shot of the Mangog, and he's traveling through this kind of desolate landscape, apparently towards Asgard. It really isn't specified. And Mangog is finding himself in the middle of the kingdom of the Storm Giants. And they're these big blue-skinned creatures. And one of them looks like Mantis from the New Gods. And they're kind of troglodyte guy, you know, typical Jack Kirby storm giants. They got big stone clubs. And the Mangog approaches them. And he's like, "Stand aside. I have no quarrel with the likes of thee.
Thou art alien to this land. Thus thou must die."
"Fools! The Mangog hath said, stand aside!"
And he smashes them, and just one blow just scatters these three storm giants, just kills them all in one blow. And the Mangog is striding through, you know, that's kind of laying there, and the Mangog is making his way through towards, it looks like a castle, which he says is the bastion of Asgardian warriors, sort of out on the, I don't know, on the frontier of the Asgardian kingdom. And Mangog is like,
"My goal at last, a distant outpost, a lonely bastion of Asgardian warriors. I will smash it into worthless rubble. Now let the forces of Odin tremble as they behold the might of Mangog."
And he just reaches out and he grabs the wall and just rips it all down. Just, and soldiers are attacking him and he's just casting them aside with just like it's nothing. And he's just gonna waving his hand and sending them all flying. Very dynamic page here of the battle. And it's more like they're attacking him and just being cast aside. And the Mangog is just kind of standing there and just wrecking things casually while they're all kind of hurling themselves up against him and being thrown aside. I think it goes without saying here that Jack Kirby is the master of this sort of thing. And you just have this wonderful structure of this page of the sort of violence radiating from Mangog. And that's something that Kirby was just an expert at showing.
"At the accursed command of Odin, my entire race was eternally destroyed for daring to invade the realm of Asgard. But before they fell, they created mighty Mangog, and I shall grant them vengeance, the most awesome vengeance the world has ever known."
Awesome, dude.
I'd like to think that that's a little bit of hyperbole on the part of the Mangog, because otherwise Odin would be responsible for genocide. And the Asgardian warriors, you know, one of them is blowing us really, it looks like it's supposed to be a horn, but it doesn't look like it would actually work. It's sort of a horn thing. So the warrior's like, "Employ the Odinian force arrow." The Odinian force arrow? That just sounds bizarre. "There be no other weapon to stop one such as he. So be it. Let the arrow be launched." And they launched the Odinian Force Arrow, which looks a lot like a German V-2 missile from World War II. I mean, it really kind of does. This look like a World War II rocket. And with a shoom, they fire the missile at the Mangog. And the Odinian Force Arrow destroys the mountain above the Mangog and topples it down over on top of him. And Mangog's like, "They've shattered the mountain above me. 'Tis done. Nothing that lives can survive the ensuing holocaust." And it's kind of molten rock and all that just kind of falls on top of Mangog. "He hath been buried beneath weight enough to crush an empire. Asgard is saved." You know, it doesn't look like that much rock. So I think there's just a little bit of hyperbole going on there. I mean, empires are awfully darn big, and that would take a whole lot more rock than Jack Kirby is showing in this panel. "The Mangog lives no more," and you kind of see the smoking pile of rock there. And the warriors are kind of going to investigate just to make sure.
"Ragnarok shall not come this night.
Our name shall be etched upon the pillars of time. Because of us, the universe stands. But see, before our eyes, what now befalls?"
"It cannot be. It must not be."
The rocks, they begin to move.
And the rocks start to shift, and all of a sudden they're going flying. Warriors are being struck by them and making life very inconvenient for them. And they're running away. They're saying,
"The mountain is bewitched. It moves with a life of its own."
And you'd think they would know better, knowing that they just buried the Mangog in rocks? I guess it's no wonder that Odin banished them to this far-off outpost away from Asgard. They're all frickin' idiots. And they think that the mountain is moving on its own? That doesn't make any sense. This guy, apparently this Asgardian is really, really stupid.
"Nay, 'tis not of its own accord that it moves. 'Tis the Mangog.
still he lives. And we do see the Mangog digging his way out of the rocks. It's like, puny Asgardians, now know you this. Nothing shall haunt thy nemesis. When Odin vanquished those who spawned me, he sealed the fate of a universe as well. For Mangog shall reach the palace eternal, and there will I unsheathe the Odin sword itself. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, and this is the first time they use this. They've used this kind of plot line a bunch of times when the Mangog has appeared. That seems to be his main goal, is to unsheathe the Odin sword. And all I can say to that is, oh my. And we get a full-page splash here of the Mangog, and he's got this huge chunk of rock, and he's lifted it above his head. And we get a little bit more exposition here from him.
When my race was dying, they took the limitless strength from all the billions whom Odin had doomed, and they found a way to store the matchless power within one living being. Thus, in all the universe, there is but one who possesses the unimaginable might of a billion, billion beings. The billions and billions of beings, as Carl Sagan might say. One whom they named Mangog.
And the Asgardian warriors are pointing and running. It's like, truly, we be undone. And Mangog's about to drop a big rock on them, so I guess that's why they're running. And we shift scenes back to the palace of Odin, where Thor and Loki and Sif and that advisor dude are watching the scene unfolding on Odin's cosmic voyeuroscope. And this time it looks kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like a black and white TV. Well, no, it's kind of got this big purple cloth looking thing that they're watching it on. I'm not sure what it is. Anyway, I guess it's a crystal, according to the caption. But anyway, so Thor's like, we cannot doubt the evidence of yon mystic visicrystal. Mangog doth truly live.
And he hath vowed to unsheathe the Odin sword.
Yet know we all, if any but him who be our sire should draw the enchanted Odin sword, at that selfsame instant, all the known universe and all who dwell therein shall be summarily destroyed.
And that kind of seems like kind of a weird and dangerous thing to just be laying around. Especially in Asgard, where the giants and stuff around. You know, hey, that seems a bit careless to me.
That Mangog is too powerful. There is nothing that can stop him, says Loki.
I take my leave of thee, evil one. Thy very voice offends mine ears. Only now, when thou dost perceive that Loki too shall fall, only now hast thou forgot thy mad ambition, thy merciless lust for power. Only now, when the sands of time be running out.
Thor, wait, where goest thou?
'Tis no concern of thine.
And it turns out that Thor and Sif are going to Odin's bedroom, and we see Odin laying there in his furs and just kind of snoring, I guess. And the guard is warning them a little bit here.
Advance with caution, son of Odin. None may awaken the royal omnipotence.
Warrior, fear thee not. I do but come to bask in the presence before the final hour.
And he's saying that really loud, so yeah, Odin's going to wake up, I guess.
Sleep thou well, my father. Sleep the sleep which grants thee life eternal. And whilst thou slumberest on, Thor shalt vanquish the Mangog, else I shall perish in the trying.
And steadfast at thy side, ever shalt thou find the goddess Sif.
I say thee nay, my lady. Where goes the god of thunder, must he go alone. Whilst our noble liege lies sleeping, here shalt thou remain, ever constant, ever vigilant.
But what of thee, my prince? Where thou goest, Sif wouldst go. And if thou perish, then let me share thy fate.
Most lovely Sif. Most truly cherished lady, would there be words my heart could speak?
And Thor gets up on his horse and is going off, riding off, and the horse is rearing up and is going, yee!
And Thor is saying here, but now must come the parting. And whilst I be gone, remember, no matter where the battle take me, the heart of Thor is ever here with beauteous Sif.
And he goes riding off, and Sif is saying a few words here.
May the eyes of Asgard be ever upon thee, most noble lord. Most noble love. Look your last, my lady. Naught but death shall claim him.
Because Loki is so optimistic. And we see Thor riding through the sort of hinterlands that surround Asgard. You know it's the hinterlands of Asgard because it's these really ornate and desolate landscapes. And then in the foreground there's a lizard or some sort of little creature watching. And this is no exception. We have a little creature here. Looks like a little, I don't know. Look like old demon dude with a with a long tail watching Thor ride by. And Thor is talking to his horse, I guess, because he's talking out loud. Says, "And now to find the Mangog." And he sees something in the distance. "In the distance, a figure unhorsed. 'Tis a fallen warrior. I must give him aid." And he rides up. And it's this old man who is just kind of laying there, dying, and he looks kind of wrecked up a bit. "Save thy waning strength, Asgardian. Succor hath arrived. Succor hath arrived."
"Thunder God, flee! Take to thy heels, son of Odin. I have beheld the Mangog. I have felt his power. Not all the fabled strength of Thor, nor a thousand such, can make him cancel half a step. All the power of a billion billion warriors are possessed by Mangog. He hath sworn to herald Ragnarok, and he cannot be denied."
"'Tis as I feared. But when the cause be hopeless, when the fight be lost, 'tis then the warrior born doth battle with vigor anew. Rest thy final rest, valiant one. Thou hast served Asgard well." And I guess the old man is dead. He's like, ugh. And Thor gets back on his horse, and he goes riding off again.
"Ahead of me, the remnants of a broken legion stagger on."
And because he didn't get the clue before, he is saying hello to these kind of ruined soldiers here, and he's saying, "What monstrous disaster hath befallen thee, brave warriors?" Like, he doesn't know what is going on here. Okay, so I have a potential explanation for this now. Now that this has happened a couple of times, maybe the Mangog emits some sort of a magical field that make people really, really stupid after they encounter him. I just don't know. Of course, that doesn't really stand up because Thor hasn't actually encountered the Mangog yet. Never mind. Stupid theory.
"We've met the Mangog. Yeah, with one blow did he fell our ranks entire. Turn thee back, God of Thunder. If thou do not, surely thou wilt share our fate."
"What talk be this from one who wears the armor of Imperial Asgard?"
"There be no foe that we would not face for thee, but Mangog is far more than foe. Truly, he be living death. Mangog is supreme."
And Thor's not buying this. He just goes riding off of that and saying, like, who needs them?
"Warrior, heed our words. Thou knowest not what lies before thee."
"I only know it lives. Therefore, I must not fear it."
And he goes riding off, and he comes across a lot of wreckage. And he finds the remains of the sort of super futuristic Kirby machinery and kind of flaming ruins here. And he's saying,
"The remnants of a once proud Asgardian strike force. Surely no single being could have caused such untold carnage. If such be evidence of Mangog's might, then who can forestall Ragnarok?"
And he continues riding on, and he sees a weird sort of cluster of rocks. And he hears voices coming from inside the rocks. He's,
"Voices from within yonder rock. Nay, 'tis not one rock alone. 'Tis many move together to form a natural cage."
And he sees a hand sticking out with a sword in it. And of course, it looks, yeah, it's green, so you know it's evil. Now, it's Fandral. And Thor is kind of pulling the rock back. And he says,
"That hand, that gleaming blade, they can belong to none but Fandral."
And you hear a voice, "'Tis Thor. He hath found us.
Be this still more of Mangog's doing?"
And he is tearing open this cage made out of rocks. Looks like Volstagg is trying to force his way out through the hole. And Hogan's like,
"Aye, but with one hand he has trapped us like beasts.
Now set us free to fight again."
"No need for haste. Not till we're certain that Mangog hath gone."
And Fandral's like, "Mangog? What if he hath not departed? Thor stands alone." And Thor whirls around and he hears footsteps. And he's like,
"Behind me, muffled footfalls. Yon shadow on the wall. I have found the one I seek."
And he is face to face with Mangog. And the Mangog reaches out and grabs Thor in one hand. And Mangog's like,
"Not so, Asgardian. 'Tis Mangog who hath found the accursed son of Odin. By thy father's command, a mighty race did perish, even as thou shalt perish now."
And he starts to squeeze Thor. And we have the Verily We Say continued. And that is Thor number 155. So like a lot of these Lee Kirby issues, this is a lot of fun. I mean, the artwork is uniformly great. Even the inks by Vinnie Coletta are really, really good this time. There's a lot of detail in the stuff that's going on. We have stuff, you know, some silly stuff here like the Odin missile or whatever. But everywhere we go, we see this is really ornate Kirby designs. And even the colonizers of Rigel, who tend to be more streamlined and simplistic, we have a lot of detail going on in here. And certainly Coletta earned his keep on this issue, at least. I like the fact that he was really kind of an ass to the nurse. And I can only blame it on Jane Foster because, you know, it's the only nurse that he's ever had any real contact with, isn't it? No, it is weird about the whole silhouette thing with his face in shadow. I mean, this is Jack Kirby, not Keith Giffen. You kind of expect that kind of thing from Giffen. Now, as for the story itself, yeah, it's a bit of a formula. You know, it is definitely a story that we've seen before. If I had to guess with this issue, it seems to me that most of the exposition and that sort of thing was dialogued by Stan, but most of the actual speaking parts were written by Kirby. There's a lot of Kirby's signature style throughout the issue, and there's a bit of Stan as well. I mean, there's a lot of this weird alliteration stuff that Stan likes to do, but a lot of this dialogue could have just been lifted straight out of the New Gods. And I think this is probably one of the more obvious examples of you've got two people dialoguing the issue. Even though Stan Lee gets the dialoguing credit, it's clear that Jack Kirby did a lot of the dialoguing himself. But definitely you get a sense of almost like a New Gods-ish sort of feel to the dialogue in this issue. Now, there is kind of one thing about the Mangog that bothers me a little bit, and that is how they say that he has the strength of a billion, billion beings. You know, that would be pretty damn strong. And if that were really the case, there would pretty much be nobody that could defeat him. So, you know, it bothers me a little bit that they keep doing this and that how, you know, the Mangog gets defeated over and over and over again by Thor over the years. But if he really had the strength of a billion, billion beings, I don't think that that would really be possible. Which makes me think that either the Mangog is the master of exaggeration, or I don't know, or maybe these billion, billion beings are really, really weak.
I have the strength of a billion, billion newborn puppies.
Okay, so with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Thanks very much for listening, folks. And as always, please feel free to contact the show if you so desire. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. All right, so with that, thanks for a great 2 years. And of course, we will be seeing you next week to continue the magnificent Mangog saga here on Radio Free Asgard.